Election College, episode 286, Charles Dawes.
Let's throw a political party. Face it, the political scene sucks, but did it always? It's time for Election College, and class is in session. Now, your hosts, Jason Goff and Ben Smith.
Hey, Ben. If you were alive in the early part of the 20th century, Charles Dawes, he would have been somebody you would have known about. But
I was not alive during then.
So
during that point.
Chances are you probably didn't know a whole lot about him.
Correct.
Well, let me tell you about...
Enlighten me.
You know, he was the vice president during the Coolidge administration, but we're going to go way back, a little bit of history about our buddy Charles Dawes. It might be disrespectful to call him Chuck.
You think? Well, I mean, if we called him Chuck, like, to his face, that might have been disrespectful, but, like, he's not around anymore. Is that still...
Maybe. Unless he'd like to go by Chuck,
okay,
by all means.
Well, we could ask him sometime.
Okay. Well, young Charles was born in Marietta, Ohio, in August of 1865. And he is the son, or was the son, or he is...
I think it's ongoing.
You can say that, yeah. Of the Civil War General Rufus Dawes. And he and his wife, Rufus and Mary, had their baby boy, Chucky. No,
not Chucky. Definitely not Chucky.
Definitely not
Chuck,
Chucky.
Maybe, but.
Chuck. Charles in 1865. So, yeah, his dad led the 6th Wisconsin Regiment of the Iron Brigade. So now you know, a little Civil War history there. And his ancestry on the Dawes side, I mean, it goes way back to, like, the Puritans.
Yeah.
He had a couple brothers, and his family, including his brothers, were all either politicians or prominent businessmen.
Yeah, so Dawes gets married to Caro Blimer on January 24th, 1889. They have a couple kids. We'll get into that. But he did go to Marietta College in 1884, so just before he had gotten married. And then he went to the Cincinnati Law School in 1886. Of course, you know, he's got to have a law degree, Jason. I mean... That's just what you do in this time. If you want to be the president or vice president, you go, you're a lawyer.
Yeah. And, you know, if you're a lawyer, you need business. And not a whole lot was happening in Marietta, Ohio at the time. So he decides to go west, young man. And he moves to Lincoln, Nebraska, where he's admitted to the bar. He's there from 1887 to 1894. And get this, Lieutenant John Pershing, when he was appointed as a military instructor at the University of Nebraska, go Cornhuskers.
Cornhuskers.
Man, sorry for anybody in Nebraska. He and Pershing meet, Dawes and Pershing, Pershing and Dawes, they meet, and they form a friendship that lasts a lifetime. He also befriends William Jennings Bryan.
Yeah.
Who's a Democrat, obviously, very outspoken. Even though they were different politically, you know, they were buddies.
Especially on the Free Silver Act and the policies. Can you imagine now having, I mean, there probably are things that trivial, but it just seems now, like looking back at the Free Silver and the gold conversation, it's like, didn't you guys have bigger things to worry about?
Yeah. Can imagine what it's going to be like 100 years from now.
Well, yeah, I guess so. So during the Panic of 1893... Dawes picks up from Lincoln, moves to Chicago, and there he gets some ownership stakes in some gas plants. He becomes the president of a gaslight company, and then the Gaslight and Coke Company in Evanston, Illinois, as well as the prior one in La Crosse, Wisconsin. So quite the mogul, maybe not a mogul quite, but definitely had some interest in business, some interest in law, etc. Something really interesting, and we don't get that much of a glimpse into like the personal hobbies and stuff of a lot of presidents during this era, or I guess, you know, vice presidents during this era. either. Actually, vice presidents during any era, for that matter.
Yeah, really.
Unless it's like they like to kill people in duels. We've learned about that. But
Or then they die in office, which is really sad.
Yeah, exactly. But Dawes actually was a pianist, and he taught himself how to play. He taught himself not only how to play, but how to write music. And people knew his music during that time. He had one song in particular called Melody in a Major, and he composed that song, but then people put lyrics to it and ends up becoming a song called It's All in the Game, which I've heard of. I don't know if anybody else has. And goes on to be like a big hit. So definitely a multifaceted individual here. He's the only vice president to be credited with a number one pop hit on the Billboard charts. So that's kind of a cool legacy, if nothing else.
Yeah. Now keep in mind that the lyrics to the melody in A major, that wasn't like until
right,
like after he's dead.
Yeah.
But still number one.
Right.
But back to politics here. He rises to some prominent positions in business, you know, there in Illinois. And the Republican Party leaders are like, dude, you're making a lot of money. Everything you do, it just turns to gold.
Gold.
So,
or silver, as it were.
As it were, yeah. So they're like, hey, can you come and manage William McKinley's bid for president in 1896? And Dawes is like, sure, that sounds fun. And because he did so much to help get McKinley elected, he was named Controller General of Currency for the Department of Treasury. Yeah, it's kind of a big deal. And he was there from 1898 to 1901, and he collects more than $25 million from banks that failed during the Panic of 1893. And he seeks to change the banking practices to eliminate that from ever happening again. Yeah, he's kind of successful in that.
Yeah.
Things always happen in the future.
People always mess stuff up for you.
Right. His dad dies in 1899, and upon his dad's death, he becomes a first-class companion of the military order of the Loyal Legion of the United States. It's pretty intense.
Yeah, absolutely. So we mentioned a little bit ago that there was some involvement with the McKinley administration and whatnot. In October of 1901, Dawes leaves the Department of the Treasury in order to go for a Senate seat, a U.S. Senate seat. And he's like, you know, McKinley, I had his back, he'll have mine. I'll probably win. Well, McKinley, unfortunately, gets assassinated. And Teddy Roosevelt is not a big fan of Dawes. Well, it's not that he's not a big fan of Dawes. He's more a fan of his opponent in the race.
Yeah, I've heard that rationale before. I'm just a bigger fan of the other guy.
Yeah, I've heard that too. Mm. Yeah. So in 1902, he doesn't win the race. So he says, okay, I'm done with politics. I don't need any more of this. So I think I'm going to, why don't I get together this thing and we'll call it the Central Trust Company of Illinois. And I'll be the president of that. Instead.
So he's like, yeah, I'm going to go and make some money now.
Yeah.
Which, you know, Republicans like that.
Right. I think everybody likes making money to some extent.
Yeah. I just think in early 20th century Republicans.
Yeah. They definitely have like monocles and stuff for sure.
Definitely. Yeah.
So in September of 1912, Dawes' son, Rufus, that we mentioned earlier when we were talking about his early life and his marriage, passes away. He drowns in Geneva Lake. He's on summer break from Princeton University. And at this time is when Dawes starts creating a bunch of different homeless shelters and kind of dedicating them to his son Rufus's memory, and puts those in Chicago and Boston as well. So another, you know, tragedy in a life of a future vice president.
So World War One happens, and Dawes is all about supporting the first Anglo-French loan to the Entente powers of $500 million. It's a lot of money, right? And this support was pretty important because they needed some outside of the country money and support. And that's exactly what Dawes does. And because of all of this, when the Americans become involved, Dawes is commissioned a major lieutenant colonel. And eventually becoming General Charles Dawes. And he serves in France. He's the chairman of the General Purchasing Board for the American Expeditionary Forces. And he is all about handling all kinds of financial affairs there in Europe. And he comes back in August of 1919, returns to politics, goes to D.C. in February of 1921, where the Senate is holding hearings on war expenditures. And keep in mind, okay, the Senate, a bunch of politicians, right? And they're like, what did you do? Where? What about that checkbook? Did you balance it while you're over there? And Dawes gives this impassioned speech where he says, Helen Maria, but it could be translated. This is a family podcast, right?
Right.
Everybody's gathered around the...
Yeah.
The speaker right now.
Right.
And so we're going to keep this clean.
We're on the old radio tube. Yeah.
So it's Helen Maria, not the other way that could be perceived. He, till his dying day, said that that's what he said. But others said that it was the other way
right.
of saying it.
Yeah.
I don't know how you...
I'm not sure either.
Yeah. Anyway, he says, Helen Maria, we weren't trying to keep a set of books over there. We were trying to win a war. And he becomes known for this speech.
Yeah.
And he kind of rises to even further prominence because of it.
It's funny because I'm thinking about, I remember somebody, this is forever ago, was complaining about the language in like war movies. And specifically, I think it was Saving Private Ryan. Mm-hmm. And somebody was like, well, yeah, it's like a war movie. Like, they're not going to be like, hey, could you please pass me that rifle so I could... fire it at this gentleman progressing across the field towards me. Mm-hmm. Like, no, that's just not how things work.
Oh, it's not?
No, probably not. So anyway, he resigns from the army in 1919 and he becomes a member of the American Legion. So he says he's going to get out of politics, but then he's back kind of supporting, I mean, maybe he didn't want to run, but he's supporting a man named Frank Loudon at the 1920 Republican National Convention. But Warren G. Harding ends up winning the presidential nomination, and he ends up getting appointed by President Harding as the first director of the Bureau of the Budget. And he gets appointed to a couple other things as well. He also wins the Nobel Peace Prize in 1925 for the Dawes Plan, which was basically to help Germany out with its economy. And it does provide some funds for the United States, but basically it helps stabilize their economy and thereby their country as well.
Man, doesn't that make you proud to be an American? That
I feel like there's a song about it we could sing.
Yeah. I mean, like, we totally helped Germany. Of course, then it came
they
back
turn
to
around.
Bite us.
Yeah, yeah.
But then we helped them again.
Yeah, we probably should have learned our lesson there. We'll see.
Second time around it worked.
Second
out.
Time around. So, at the 1924 Republican National Convention, President Calvin Coolidge gets pretty much immediately selected to be the Republican nominee for the president. But the vice presidential nominee was a bit more controversial, I guess you could say. Frank Loudon does get nominated this time, but he declines. And so Coolidge is like, all right, well, if I can't work with him, how about this guy named William Borah? He's a senator out of Idaho. And William Borah is like, thanks, but I'm also going to decline. So they then try to nominate Herbert Hoover, but he's not really popular enough to get the votes that are needed. So eventually they're like, okay, well, anybody, just randomly, does anybody want this job at all? No, that's not really the way it worked, but they ended up choosing Dawes to be the vice presidential nominee. Coolidge is done with all the back and forth and not knowing, so he accepts their choice and says basically, you know, he feels like Dawes could be a loyal companion and be a good addition to his campaign team or to his candidacy for that matter.
Yeah, so keep in mind, Calvin Coolidge kind of soft-spoken a little bit, and then this Charles Dawes guy, pretty outspoken. And after all, I mean, he's a brigadier general.
That's right.
By this time.
Yeah.
And he's got lots of money. And
it's such a cool title.
Brigadier general.
Brigadier anything.
It
is. Brigadier is a cool word.
Maybe we should form a society called the Brigadier Society, and then we can just give each other titles.
All right. If anybody wants that, let us know.
The Brigadier Society. There probably is a Brigadier Society. There probably breaking is. A trademark. Right.
Please
now.
Don't sue us. We don't have any money.
Yeah, maybe we can incorporate like in the Caribbean or something.
Oh, I like that idea. Do we get to go there to check it out?
We have to go there to file our paperwork.
All right, I'll do it.
Okay. Who wants to go to the Caribbean with us? Anyway, Dawes is like a really, really faithful companion during the race. He is going out, giving speeches, comparing the nominee, Robert LaFollette Sr., as a dangerous radical who sympathizes with the Bolsheviks. Yeah, that's like pulling out all the stops.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to go after this guy. He's opening a can. Man, that's another...
Oh.
I'll just say he's opening a can.
He's opening a can of something.
And, yeah, and he's really going after the opponent politically, and needless to say, Coolidge wins. Like, Coolidge would have won anyway.
I would imagine so.
But he's inaugurated, you know, again. I guess he's not really inaugurated. Are you considered inaugurated when somebody's assassinated? I don't think so. You're sworn in.
Well,
but you don't have a party.
He already got it. Oh, you mean when you said again? Yeah, this will be his first inauguration.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you definitely don't want to have a party for that.
Definitely not. So, unless you don't like Harding.
Well, that's possible.
Yeah. What a jerk. At the end. I mean, to his family, too.
Right.
Every time I think about that, he's like the Aaron Burr of 20th century. Terrible.
That's almost insulting. But he deserves it.
Wow. Anyway, so the inauguration happens in March of 1925. And the president's like, hey, I want Charles B. Warren to be the attorney general. And, you know, you got all of the junk that's going on from the residue that's coming from the Harding administration, like Teapot Dome and some of those other controversies. And it's really important that Dawes, as the president of the Senate, is hanging around the Senate defending his guy. And like me, about 2 or 3 in the afternoon, I want to go for a nap.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
No.
But Dawes decides, hey, I'm going to go take a nap. Everybody, don't deliberate anything.
Can you imagine if that happened now? I know.
Hey.
It probably does happen. We just
pause.
Don't hear about it.
Yeah, it probably does. Yeah. So Dawes is like, okay, I'm going to go take a nap. Everybody hang tight. I'll be back. I'll be rested. I've listened to a podcast while I'm resting.
Right,
and
right.
I'll have this new energy.
Obviously.
And the Senate's like, yeah, he's gone. And he, being Charles B. Warren, is rejected in the Senate. And Dawes didn't have a chance.
Yeah.
That puts a strain on the Dawes-Coolidge relationship.
Right, yeah. They're really not buddies anymore. And Dawes says, hey, I'm not going to cabinet meetings anymore. I'm really annoyed with Coolidge and a lot of the stuff he's doing at this point. And he passes a couple bills through Congress that then Coolidge vetoes. In 1927, Coolidge is like, look, I'm not going to go for re-election. Sorry. Dawes once again is in favor of Frank Loudon at the Republican National Convention, but they choose Herbert Hoover this time. People are talking, maybe Dawes is going to be Hoover's running mate. We'll see. But Coolidge says he would consider it an affront if they were to renominate Dawes for vice president. So, yeah, he isn't selected at that point.
Yeah, so dejected and disheartened. I don't know if he's dejected or disheartened. He's probably ready to be gone.
Right.
Because he was kind of tired of the Senate.
Right.
Wasn't too big of a fan there of, you know, presiding and doing all that stuff.
Right.
He goes home, but not too long thereafter, Herbert Hoover's like, hey, buddy, Charles, we need you in England. Go. Serve, be the ambassador. And that's exactly what he does. And this is hilarious, but it was like customary when you're the ambassador to England, you had to wear knickers.
Yeah.
Or breeches or
breeches.
Whatever. Breeches.
Breeches.
Breeches. My 4-year-old asked the other day, what are breeches?
Well, that's a good question.
It is a very good question. Yeah. I need to look that up.
Yeah.
And Dawes is like, ain't going to do that.
Right.
Listen, I'm rich. I don't have to do that.
I don't have to wear breeches.
So the king didn't like that too much, but he kind of got over himself.
Yeah.
On that, the U.S. they're still friends with Britain.
Yep.
In spite of it all, but so the Great Depression happens while he's over there in jolly old England, and Hoover's like, dude, we need you and your money knowledge to get back here and head the newly created Reconstruction Finance Corporation. Dawes lasts a couple months. He's like, dude,
can't do this.
I'm so done with that. He resigns, and then he goes back and tries to rescue the City National Bank and Trust Company of Chicago. And political opponents were all over that. They're like, dude, you're the reason for that failure. It's all your fault, buddy.
Yeah. So he's done. He's out of public service. He goes back to banking, and he's in banking. He's the chairman of the board for the City National Bank and Trust Company for a couple decades. And he ends up passing away in 1951 on April 23rd from a coronary thrombosis. And so he's buried in Rose Hill Cemetery in Chicago. And so, yeah, I mean, a very active early life. Became the vice president almost on a whim. Was no longer vice president, but had some political things. And then just goes back to private life for 25 years-ish until he passes away. Very unexpected. Not unexpected that he passed away, but you see a lot of people just continue to be in the limelight, in the politics, and he wasn't. He was done, pretty much.
Interesting when you think about it from this era, because, you know, Coolidge dies in the early 30s, but Hoover, he's alive until, I mean, after the war.
Yeah.
For quite some time.
Right.
And to see what these guys saw, I mean, think about it. They can remember what it's like to not have an automobile. They can remember what it's not like to have an airplane. And by the end of their lives, like, we're destroying countries.
Right.
Automobiles and airplanes.
Yeah.
And the like.
Nuclear bombs.
Yeah. Just amazing.
Insanity.
So.
You know, I was thinking the other day, there was something, I'm trying to remember what it was. Oh, okay. So there aren't very many pictures of the inside of the Supreme Court room, mm-hmm. or the actual court itself. And there is actually only a couple of the actual justices in the Supreme Court. And one of them was taken by, I think, a doctor who pretended that his arm was broken and carried a camera into the courtroom in his sling, basically. And I remember people saying, like, oh, that's kind of weird that he would be able to do that. Like, camera, it was the 30s. Cameras were huge. Mm-hmm. And this must have been on somewhere on the internet or on Facebook in a group or something. And somebody was like, well, yeah, you're right. But you also have to remember that this was only like 10 years away from the atomic bomb being detonated. So technology was further along even in the 30s than we tend to remember.
Yeah.
So
I wonder what kind of technology is out there right now that would just like fry our brains if we saw it.
I don't want to know.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Oh, there's definitely stuff that we can't fathom yet. That's already working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely crazy. Well, before we, get censored off of the podcast world.
Right.
We better wrap it up by saying we have an awesome Facebook group that is private. But
you could probably join.
Yeah, we'll let you in.
Just go ahead over to electioncollege.com/group, and you'll be ushered into the presence of, I don't know, what, 70-ish other people who love Election College, or at least like presidential things. And you can join in that fun chat, share articles. If you go to cool historical places, we want to see them, hear about it, etc. It's a fun little community. You can also just, check us out on Facebook, like our page there, on Twitter, etc., stuff like that. Sometimes we're active a lot. Sometimes we're not terribly active, but we are always responsive if possible.
Yeah, because we're there for you. Like, post your stuff.
That's right.
Because it's awesome. And in case you didn't know, my RV expedition has begun.
Oh, yeah.
I'm actually here with Ben.
Oh, yeah.
In Pennsylvania.
Goody.
So the fam is here for a month, and then we're going to head over to central Pennsylvania after this, like November, some like late October, November.
Yeah.
We'll be there. So if there's any cool things that are in your area, if you happen to be from central Pennsylvania, I know that area pretty well, but do offer your suggestions because we're always looking to go nifty places.
Nifty, nifty. And, you know, if you want to shop on Amazon, help us out a little bit. electioncollege.com/Amazon. We get a small cut of anything you buy with that link. Other than that, thanks so much for listening.
Yeah, we'll see you next week.